Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, I can't get over it. So low, I can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, can't get over it. So low, can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it.
Hello and welcome to the Holy Half Hour here on 3TFM with me, the Reverend Alec Noble, Minister of Saltcoats North Parish Church. As you know, from time to time we like to introduce you to some very interesting local people who have fascinating and inspiring stories to tell. This programme is one of those. So I'd like you to meet Mr. Gordon Fraser right now. So welcome, Gordon, and thanks for coming to share your story with us. Understand that you've come to the studio straight from work, so tell us a wee bit about yourself and where you work and that sort of thing.
Okay, hi Alec, thanks very much for having me on your show here. So I work in computers, in IT. I work around the design of large enterprise storage systems, putting them into various different companies and enterprises. And
sometimes we get lost in the technicalities of all this, but suffice it to say that he's quite a computer expert.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So you've been working today, and tell us about your family a wee bit. And you're a married man. And
I live in Stevenson. I'm married to Catherine, and we have two children. It's Craig, who's my stepson, and he's 15, and we have a daughter called Tony, who's 7.
Craig's quite good at swimming, I understand.
He works very hard at that, and he competed recently in the British Age Group Championships along with two of his cousins, Jordan and Ross. Out of the boys there, Jordan, who's 17, he's actually looking towards hopefully getting a place at the Commonwealth Games. So, they all work very hard at it and train maybe about upwards of 8, 9, 10 times a week at least.
So are you a local man, born and bred?
No, actually I was born in Aberdeen, and we moved around a lot when I was younger with my dad's work. He worked for the Forestry Commission, and we moved from Aberdeen to Inverness, and then from Inverness down to Basingstoke. From there up to Dunfermline, and then back to Aberdeen again. And at that age, I left to go to university and went down to Edinburgh to study.
So you've been left university and working for quite a few years now.
Yeah, so, well, I'm 47 now, so I've been working for quite some time now. Originally into electronics and the hardware side of things, then graduating more to the IT computers program side of things.
What sort of hobbies have you got?
I'm quite keen on swimming myself. Swim a couple of times a week, maybe at least, and also enjoy cycling and running, and enjoy putting all three of those things together at the one time and doing triathlons.
When you do a triathlon, what would you have to do for an average triathlon?
The normal ones that I do, because I don't actually manage to train that often, to be, and then there is the classically known triathlon, which is the Ironman, which is a huge event. You'd be generally on the go for about 15 hours trying to do that, but that's way out of my
league. You're just doing the wee triathlon.
How much
is a wee triathlon?
The wee triathlons that I would do would be the sprint or the standard. And a sprint triathlon is a half-mile swim, 25k cycle and 5k run, and double those distances for a standard.
I just want you to spell that out, because by the end of this programme, we'll come back to that.
Sure.
So what music do you like in particular? And I've been asking you to pick the music for tonight, so we'll get a sample of what you like.
Yep.
But introduce to us your first track.
The first track here is a special track for myself and my wife. It's the song that was the first song played at our wedding, and it's Dr. Hook, A Little Bit More.
When your body's had enough of me and I'm laying flat out on the floor, when you think I've loved you all I can, I'm gonna love you a little bit more. Come on over here and lay by my side. I've got to be touching you. Let me rub your tired shoulders the way I used to do. Look into my eyes and give me that smile, the one that always turns me on. And let me take your hand down,
listening to 3TFM with me, Alec Noble, and our special guest, Gordon Fraser. One Sunday, I looked down from the pulpit and I saw a visitor standing beside Kate Hughes, one of our members. That's your mother-in-law. We'd met several years previously at your father-in-law's funeral, but when you suddenly turned up, I confess I didn't recognise you. You also looked very different from your normal self. You looked very ill that day. Well, that's my side of it anyway. So I'd just like you to share, Gordon, what was your side of the story at that point? Why did you suddenly just turn up at the church that day?
Yeah, so I guess I was quite ill at that time. And to be honest and frank, I was probably putting my affairs in order to an extent, financially, personally, and spiritually. And I'd already been to see my lawyer and get my will sorted out, make sure that was okay.
This is because you had been told you were terminally ill.
Yes. And I'd been to see my financial advisor, and another part of that was to come and see yourself as well.
This was you at 47 with a wife and young family.
Yeah.
Told that you were terminally ill.
Yep. And the way it started out, it started just really as stomach pains, and it kind of just... gone to the GP about it at first, and there wasn't anything really obviously wrong with me. He said that it possibly was just some stomach acid, and given me some tablets for that. and they seemed to work at first, but after a while they weren't really working again. One morning the pain was just so bad with it that I got myself into A&E, and the nurse in there had said, "You're actually looking quite jaundiced." And
that's what I thought from the pulpit, that it was jaundice. Yeah.
And I'd said to her, "Oh, no, I don't think I'm jaundiced at all." And then I looked down at my arm and I was like, "Wow, yeah, you're right."
Did so this it, just it, happen
it come,
suddenly?
It come and go out very, very quickly, yeah. And they took me in and they'd done an ultrasound scan, and that had shown that there was something blocking my bile duct, and that was the cause of the jaundice. And they'd done some further scans there as well that showed a cancerous lump on my pancreas, and they also saw signs that it spread to my liver as well. And they said, "Well, look, once it's spread to your liver, then generally that's it. There's no surgical or other treatment that we could give you apart from just palliative care through oncology."
Which is quite a blow from a triathlon athlete.
Yeah. Suddenly. But on the other hand as well, I thought there was kind of an acceptance of it at one level, because although I was still fairly young, I wasn't that young. I'd done a lot of things in life. I like to think I'd lived a good life. And I'd travelled a bit, seen a bit of the world, done a lot of things. There was that acceptance on it on one level, but on the other level, there was my family. And as I'd experienced before in the past, bereavement's always harder, I think, than on those left behind. I'd seen through my father-in-law. I kind of knew the drill of what happened when somebody was suffering from a very similar type of cancer. He had actually cancer right on his bile duct. And I knew how that pretty much ran and how that all worked.
You sound very calm about it, but were you not really frustrated, angry, upset?
Not for myself. For my family, I think so, and what that would mean to them.
Aye. You spoke to me before about Ecclesiastes chapter 3, and it says a time for everything.
Mm-hmm.
That meant something to you at that moment, you were saying?
Yeah, I think it just it explains the nature of life, that there is life, there is death, there's a time for everything, and that it's just part of the whole cycle of life, that there's a bit of everything in there.
Well,
everyone dies. You just never know when it is exactly how long your own life is going to be and when it is you're going to die. Nobody can cheat death forever.
What I find interesting in your story.
And that's part of that acceptance in that verse, that there is a time for life, a time for death. Everyone's death comes to them at some point, and that was mine at that point.
So you sound like you're really quick to adapt and accept things on the basis of that theology.
Mm-hmm.
Time to live, a time to die. And there's music. Your next track is a bit of that philosophy, isn't it? The birds turn, turn, turn. Do you want to sing about the song, or will we just listen to it?
I think I've said what it means to me now.
Right, let's listen to the birds in the context of what you've just said.
Okay.
To every purpose under heaven.
So I'm talking to Gordon Fraser, and Gordon, you're giving us a real insight, and I appreciate that. You're a young, fit man, suddenly takes ill, and you're told that you're terminally ill and there's nothing can be done. And from the theology of Ecclesiastes, you realise there's a time to live, a time to die, and you're pretty good at accepting it. But then the next thing you do is you don't just accept it. Can you explain how in one hand you're accepting it, and the other hand you did what you did next?
I think because there was that part of me that accepted it from my own self. I was okay with that as accepting it as my path, but at the same time, I still had a young family, and for their sake, I think there was still a reason for me to be around and something there to push me on.
So what did you do about it?
We between myself and my wife, I must say, I probably did a whole load of the research and phoning around whilst I was in hospital on our behalf. Catherine, she was brilliant at that time, really amazing, I must say. And we researched on the internet, and we also got sent some newspaper articles. And one of those was for a very gifted surgeon in Southampton called Neil Pearce, who is probably at the frontier of surgical treatment of pancreatic cancer. And Catherine had contacted him, and although he had a caseload on his desk of about 100 different cases to look at, he took the time to look at my case and asked for a copy of the scans that had been done so far, and reckoned that he could do actually something with it. And not only that, but he had a hunch that what they were seeing on my liver as spread of the cancer wasn't actually really that, and was possibly something that's called a hemangioma, which is actually just a collection of blood vessels that's been there forever, really. Kind of like the way that a birthmark is on your skin. And in the light of that, although it still was a very, very complex and tricky operation with the tumour being the size of a man's fist, it was something that he felt he could actually have a good chance of doing something with and me surviving it.
So you went off to Southampton,
mm-hmm.
full of high hopes.
Yep.
And he did his operation.
Mm-hmm. I was actually up and down a couple of times prior to that to get further scans done by himself, and then him looking at those and saying, well, we still don't quite know, and then going back down again to get more scans and also a biopsy done. And there was a lot of waiting around, a lot of real roller coaster moments, highs and lows within that. But eventually, yes, as you say, I got the call one day to say, that's it. It certainly looks like the thing that we're seeing on your liver is this hemangioma. And he was prepared to go ahead and do the operation. So I went down to Southampton on 18th of December.
And it was quite a big operation.
They did the operation.
How long did it last?
I was 10 hours on the table.
And they did quite a few things.
And yeah, so he took out my entire pancreas. It's a full pancreatectomy, and my gallbladder, my spleen, part of the bottom of my stomach, and part of my small intestine as well, which was sort of used to just tie up all the bits that he'd taken out, really, and replumb it all. And even the operation itself, I must say, was not without its drama as well, because as he was doing the operation initially, as he cut me open and was having a look around because he wanted to make sure, just actually put eyes on this thing on my liver, he looked at that, yep, that's fine. But when he looked further down from that at my bile duct, he saw some nodules on there and thought, oh dear, this doesn't look good. But he sent a section of that away quickly to get examined, and it turned out it was just infection from a stent that had been put in to alleviate the build-up of bile that was causing the jaundice. So, yeah, it all went ahead, and 10 hours later I was waking up rather groggy, and my wife and my brother were there at the bottom of my bed waiting for me.
And it's a long story, but the end result is that after the major operation, you're pretty well good as new.
To an extent, yes. I have a fair amount of medication to take. I'm on insulin for life now. I'm as good as being diabetic, and take a pill with every meal, which replaces the pancreatic enzymes that I obviously no longer can produce. And I'm on penicillin as well, and a couple other little bits and pieces. But yeah, you're right. To a large extent, I'm living as normal a life as I could really hope for. There's probably people in this world who have had much less happen to them, a minor stroke or something, and it's affected their day-to-day lives a lot greater. So I'm exceptionally lucky. And
you're working
full-time. I have a great appreciation of that. Yeah.
You're working full-time,
yeah,
and you're back doing triathlons.
Yeah. So on the 16th of June this year, which was just under 6 months from when I had my operation, I did a triathlon again. I did a sprint triathlon at Loch Oar in Fife, and actually took a minute off the time that I did it in the year previously.
So it's your personal best?
For that event, yes.
Uh-huh.
But then I do have slightly less body parts, so there's less of me to carry around.
All right. Oh, well. So, would you call all of that a miracle?
There's certainly parts of it that are miraculous. The survival rate of pancreatic cancer is less than 5%, and my chances of coming through that. And also the other great thing post-operative is that they did pathology on the tumour and surrounding tissue, and there had been no spread of that as well, what they call cancer in situ. So not only did I get away with that first part, but I didn't need any chemotherapy, which is very, very often the case when somebody has pancreatic surgery like that for a cancer. So that, I guess that part is what you could term slightly miraculous. What I would term a real miracle would be if I just woke up one morning and the cancer had completely gone. But I certainly
believe...
Well,
it depends your definition of miracle, you see. Yeah, that's the magic miracle. But what about the miracle of from A to B? You're an ex-terminally ill man.
Everyone from Neil Pearce, my surgeon, through the whole surgical team and care staff that looked after me were using the God-given talents that they had been given and developed. That's probably more the truth of it than a miracle. But yeah,
the reason I introduced the word miracle is because you've picked the next track. Why did you pick the next track?
So the next track here is a Neil Diamond song. He's a favourite singer of my mother. Lyrically, I quite like the song as well. The song's called Pretty Amazing Grace, and I know that the song that's inspired that, Amazing Grace, is a favourite of yourselves. It talks of being away from the church for a while, which I probably have. I've been one of these people who've thought, well, you can be a Christian and not really need to go to church. But when I've gone back, I've found that's probably not really the case.
Well, more of that in a minute. But let's hear Neil Diamond singing Pretty Amazing Grace.
Amazing grace is what you showed me. Pretty amazing grace is who you are. I was an empty vessel. You filled me up inside, and with amazing grace restored my pride. Pretty amazing grace is how you saved me, and with amazing grace reclaimed my heart. Love in the midst of chaos calm in the heat of war, showed with amazing grace what love was for. You forgave my insensitivity and my attempt to then mislead you. You stood beside a wretch like me. Your pretty amazing grace was all I needed. Stumbled inside the doorway of your chapel, humbled and awed by everything I found. Beauty and love surround me, freed me from what I feared. Asked for amazing grace and you appeared. You overcame my loss of hope and faith, gave me the truth I could believe in. You led me to a higher place, showed your amazing grace when grace was what I needed. Look in a mirror, I see your reflection. Open a book, you live on every page. I fall and you're there to lift me. You share every road I climb, and with amazing grace you ease my mind. I came to you with empty pockets first. When I returned, I was a rich man. Didn't believe love would quench my thirst, but with amazing grace, you showed me that it can. In your amazing grace, I had a vision. From that amazing place I came to be. Into the night I wander, wandering aimlessly. I found your amazing grace to comfort me.
So our holy half hour's fast coming to a close here, Gordon. But it's been amazing to hear your story about how you were terminally ill, mm-hmm. and then suddenly a glimmer of hope, and you go for it, and it works. And now you're not terminally ill. You're back to normal life pretty well, and you can even do triathlons.
Yeah.
We were discussing whether you call that a miracle or not, and whether it's God's grace or what. But you were saying just before the song that you were not a church-going guy, and now we can reveal that you're about to join the church. Between recording this and it going out on air, you'll have joined the church.
Yes, that's right.
Can you tell me just a wee bit of how all of this has left you thinking and feeling, you know?
I think I've found in going back to the church just something that was a bit missing from my life. We live in a day and age where we call ourselves a secular society, but we replace it with we replace the church with other things, and those things aren't necessarily the best things for us. I find as well it's a therapy almost in itself. It's a weekly dose of vitamin church, and therapeutic in terms of it gives you time to consider your week and consider your life, and listen to the sermon of the week, and see how that's affecting my life and how I can improve on my life, because I've been given a second chance. I want to make the most of that second chance.
Yeah, well, that's a good thought, and I'm afraid, Gordon, time has run out, so let's finish on that thought. We've just time for one more track, which you've chosen, and you've chosen Paul Weller, and it's entitled, appropriately enough, Brand New Start. So thank you very much for coming into the studio and sharing your story with us. It's very inspiring.
Yes, thanks very much for having me on.
And we'll leave you with Paul Weller.
I'm gonna like a brand new star. I'm gonna kick down the door. I'm gonna get myself in. I'm gonna fix up the yard and not fall back again. I'm gonna clean up my earth and build a heaven on the ground. Not something distant and unfound, but something real to me. But something real to me. All that I can be. All that I am, I can see. All that is mine is in my hands. So to myself I call. There's somewhere else I should be. There's someone else I can see. There's something more I can find. It's only up to me. I'm gonna clean up my earth and build a heaven on the ground. Not something distant and unfound, but something real to me. But something real to me. I'm gonna clear out my head. I'm gonna get myself straight. I know it's never too late to make a brand new start. To make a brand new start.